You're listening to Talk of the Rock with your host, Kayla DeRoche. So to start off with today, we're going to be talking about the Coast Guard and mainly appreciation of the Coast Guard. So with us today, we have Captain Wessling, Captain Jeff Wessling, and Stephanie De La Garza from the Chamber of Commerce. So Stephanie, I feel like you're a good person to start with to kind of give the summary of what Coast Guard Appreciation Day is about and how that originated.
Sure. So back 28 years ago, the Kodiak Chamber of Commerce started the Coast Guard Appreciation Dinner to recognize the men and women of the United States Coast Guard that serve here in Kodiak. The dinner was started, and it's always been called We Applaud You. It's a way for the local community to express its appreciation to the many enlisted personnel of the United States Coast Guard. Many times the flight crew or rescue swimmers receive all of the accolades for completing a successful mission, and the personnel who maintain the helicopter, or monitor the radios, fueled, cleaned, prepared equipment, worked in admin, don't receive those type of accolades. And so we want to make sure that they also receive public recognition for the job that they do and to thank them for their service for the Coast Guard here in Kodiak.
And part of that day is talking to local government and making it official. Can you talk a little bit about that aspect?
Sure. So each year we write requests for proclamations from local government, from the state governor's office, from the senators, all the way up to the president of the United States. And each year we get back proclamations honoring the men and women of the Kodiak, the Coast Guard here in Kodiak. This year, of course, the borough and the city have written proclamations recognizing that February 18th is Coast Guard Appreciation Day here in Kodiak. We've also received proclamations from the governor's office, both senators, and they're still pouring in.
So, Captain Wessling, I have observed that part of your job is going up and accepting these recognitions of the Coast Guard Appreciation Day. But that is as much as I know about your position, because I'm not very familiar with Coast Guard positions in general. So if you could introduce yourself, maybe talk about how long you've been here and what you do.
Glad to. I'm Captain Jeff Wessling. I'm the commanding officer of the Coast Guard base here in Kodiak. In that function, I essentially serve as the Coast Guard's mayor for all of the Coast Guard personnel here in Kodiak, to include the Coast Guard Air Station, one of the largest, if not the largest, air station in the Coast Guard. And we also have a number of afloat tenants with the Cutter Monroe, the Cutter Alex Haley, and the Cutter Spar, as well as a number of other smaller units, the 8th Navigation Team, the Communications Detachment, and the Marine Safety Detachment, the Pacific Region Fisheries Training Command, are all located here in Kodiak with us. So a lot of my job is to coordinate across the commands and ensure that all mission support services are provided to those who operate from Kodiak, whether it's the aircraft, the cutters, the fish school, as we call the North Pacific Region Fisheries Training Command, or the communications side of the house.
How did you get here to the island?
Well, I come from a background in mission support and engineering, logistics, delivery, and acquisitions. And so with that background, the base being a mission support command, it made sense at that time for the assignment officers to move me here, having come from Elizabeth City, North Carolina, where I was the deputy, essentially, for the Coast Guard base, coordinating mission support to everything aviation out of E-City. So that's my background. I came here in June of 2014, and unfortunately I'm going to have to depart to my next assignment this July.
Oh, no. In the middle of summer, that's the most unfortunate timing.
Absolutely.
What are you going to miss most about this island?
The outdoor opportunities and the people. This by far is an incredible location with the involvement with the community. There's no place like Kodiak. Between the environment that we operate in, the mountains, the fishing, the hunting, the hiking, just the outdoor experience is something that attracts people, and it's what we don't want to leave. And a lot of that has to do with the people here in Kodiak as well. They're warm, they're receptive. It's obvious to me that the people of Kodiak love the Coast Guard, and the people of the Coast Guard love Kodiak.
And where are you headed after this?
I am heading back to Norfolk, Virginia, where I'm going to be leading the Coast Guard's financial management and procurement systems transformation for the service.
Oh, what does that involve?
Our whole supply chain, how we buy stuff and how we deliver that to the operators in the field so that they can maintain the aircraft, the ships, the boats, and the infrastructure.
Well, that's a massive job.
It is.
So you offered a little bit earlier to give a little history about the Coast Guard on the island, and I want to take you up on that now.
Absolutely. The Coast Guard has a history coming to Kodiak dating back to 1867 when the United States purchased Alaska from Russia. And the first real known visit to Kodiak had to do with the Coast Guard cutter Lincoln in August, specifically August 26 of 1867. The cutter Lincoln ended up mooring off of Kodiak to avoid a storm. And at that point in time, Captain Howard came ashore. He paid a visit to the local commander of the Russian American Transportation Company. And after touring the storehouses and the island, Captain Howard at that time concluded that Kodiak was more important as a commercial and agricultural point than Sitka, Alaska, his previous stop on the Alaskan tour was. We had a lot of activity with the cutter Corin in 1880, looking to initiate the Bering Sea patrols. We've had opportunities with the aviation community making its first arrival on island on April 17th, 1947, when a Coast Guard detachment was established at the Naval Air Station here in Kodiak. Lieutenant Ben Dameron was the first commanding officer, and at that time, his detachment had 7 pilots, 30 enlisted men, and only one PBY-5 Alpha Catalina aircraft. The second aircraft arrived shortly after. The cutter Storrs, which has been decommissioned, was homeported here as the first permanently homeported cutter, and that was in 1957, having been transferred from Juneau. And then we opened up the communication station in October of 1970 to begin broadcasting weather warnings by radio from Kodiak, Ketchikan, and Juneau to the Maritime Fleet.
Oh, so it expanded during that time.
In the 1970s, we expanded significantly as the Navy was in the process of downsizing, and then the Coast Guard, in about 1975, formed Base Coast Guard as you know it today, as air operations and afloat operations expanded here in Kodiak.
Could you speak a little bit about some of the other military groups that are on the island? Because people hear a lot about the Coast Guard, and they don't always know that there are Navy people here as well, and I'd be interested to hear a little bit about that.
Absolutely. The Navy SEALs, the Special Warfare Training Center, has a detachment here in Kodiak that's one of our tenants of the Coast Guard base in Kodiak, where as part of their pipeline training to earn their the SEAL Trident, they have to experience cold weather training opportunities. And so they train out of Kodiak for that purpose, where they're in the water, they're ashore, they're experiencing the mountains, they're experiencing snow for the first time for many of the SEALs.
And according to some of my Coast Guard friends, there's also a training that the Coasties go through, too, as far as survival goes.
Absolutely. Depending on the whether you're on the ships or at the air station, there's different levels of training. There's training that takes place in the water with the survival suits, and there's also training that takes place for some of the members of the crews in the interior of Alaska working with the Air Force and other DOD components.
Yeah, I think that those are the people who have talked about some of their trainings. They said they were in they had to make their own shelters or something along those lines.
Right. That's the members of the air station typically.
Yeah.
That are training.
Yeah, that's true. That rings true. Now I remember exactly who told me that stuff. And what kind of training did you go through when you were first starting out?
Most of my training, as I said, I've been in engineering and logistics. So most of my training has been with the Army Corps of Engineers or with the Navy Construction Battalion training schools to understand the application of my civil engineering background to facilities maintenance, construction, planning, and development of facilities. And then I've branched into organizational leadership for one of my master's degrees, national security studies and homeland defense and security, and also acquisitions.
So you got a master's degree in organizational leadership.
That is correct.
That is a degree I've never considered existed. Where did you get that?
Through Regent University in Virginia Beach, Virginia.
All right. Is that full of many other people who are involved in the military or the Coast Guard?
When I went through, I was in one of the first cohorts that Regent University had started at the master's level. They had a PhD program at that point in time that was several years old. And over time, we have seen more Coast Guard officers complete that degree and a lot of Navy and Army officers as well.
What did they teach you about in that class? I'd be curious to know.
A lot of strategic leadership discussions, not just tactical operations of how to get people to do things, but it was more focused on helping to define goals of an organization and where do you want to take an organization long term so that you can bring the talent of the people in the organization to exercise and execute those long-term goals.
That seems like such a great idea for a class. I think everyone who wants to be a leader should take some kind of management class on how to do that properly. It's just not as easy as it would seem. You're so lucky to have the opportunity to do that. So obviously, just if you read the news and you read Facebook pages and posts, you kind of know what the Coast Guard does for their community, but can you speak a little bit more about the Coast Guard's importance to Kodiak and its economy in whatever capacity you can think of?
Sure. So Kodiak is ranked the number 2 fishing port in the U.S. by weight and the number 3 port by value, with landings of about $513 million, 513 million pounds of seafood worth $137 million. So as you can tell, the fishing industry is very important to Kodiak and is really the backbone of our economy. So the Coast Guard being here, protecting those resources and also being there to protect those fishermen if that's ever needed, is, you know, a tremendous asset to Kodiak. So having that here is great. Also, going through one of the things that we do for the Coast Guard Appreciation Dinner, we have 100 tickets that go to the Coast Guard, and each individual commands pick people from their units to come to the dinner. And when they do that, they also send a bio for the person. And reading through them at the chamber, it's always really interesting because you see just how involved Coast Guard members are in our community here in Kodiak. They're often volunteering for the Lions at the animal shelter. They really ingrain themselves in the Kodiak community, and it's just great to have those people here in Kodiak.
And we're going to transition over to these gentlemen in just a second, but I, for one, am grateful to the Coast Guard for bringing some of my main friends to the island. If not for them, I wouldn't have such good buddies here. So that's why I'm grateful for the Coast Guard. So why don't we transition over? Thank you both. Why don't we transition over to our other guests? This is a Lions Club event, if I'm correct. Why don't you guys introduce yourselves?
Well, we're both. I put 20 years playing IDOC on Tuesday, and he spent at least 20 years in the Coast Guard.
Right, I'm retired Coast Guard, 23 and a half years.
So it's everywhere, you know.
Yep.
Go ahead, Brian.
All right, so I'm Brian, and I'm from the Kodiak Lions Club, and I wanted to tell everybody about an event that we're having at the Mecca. We're having a lip-sync battle. So what we're doing is we're raising money for our mission to Guatemala. And what we're doing is we're doing the lip sync contest. It's going to be Saturday the 18th. The bar is going to open at 8 o'clock, and we're going to start our competition at 9 o'clock. DJ Mark's going to be doing the music for us. So $5 to get in the door, $10 to play the game, and we're going to have prizes, cash prizes, and we're going to have a couple of cool prizes that Doc may or may not tell us about. I'm not sure yet. So we're looking for Kodiak talent to come out.
And acting talent.
Acting talent, that's right. That's the best part about lip sync.
Shower singers that don't want to have a soundtrack, but you know, live.
That's right. You don't have to sing. All you got to do is move your mouth. So, Doc, why don't you tell us like what we're looking for?
Well, the motivation for this project is there's four of us right now from our club headed for Guatemala, and our trip is in July, the 22nd until August 3rd. And we're going down as a team. Brian's going to be building cinder block buildings for used both for education and clinical purposes. And I've got 800 kids to do eye exams on. We're taking 5,000 pair of glasses from, you know, when Kodiak, you see the little lion's boxes around. We take those glasses, clean them, evaluate them, and put them in cases so that we can pick out your prescription without having to go from scratch. And we're taking that and a couple other really interesting things. One is shoes, the 300 pair of shoes that actually they grow. You can get them in fourth grade and they still fit when you're a senior. And how does that work? It's kind of like a moccasin that all the sides and the end are adjustable. And we're taking, you know, we're going to Guatemala City and then going about 70 miles north, which is not a really, you say, modern area. So there's a lot of things that are in need. We're taking toothbrushes. We have these, you know, girls' peri kits that are for young girls growing up that are made by a nurses association. We're taking 300 of those. There's a lot of cultural things, too. You know, in Guatemala, even in a nice hotel, you can't put toilet paper in the toilet. Isn't that something? You go, And, you know, and not eating meat is unheard of in Mayan culture. So you can't say, yeah, I'm a vegan, please, which is the meat. It doesn't work down there. It's kind of like Brazil. They go around with the meat and saw it off the bone, and you pick which one you want.
We actually have several different missions that we're doing while we're down there, and this is in conjunction with the Rainbow Network. Basically, what we're doing is we're taking about 20-something lions from all over the state. Again, there's four of us coming from Kodiak. And we're going to go down, and Lion Doc is going to do eye exams and eye screening. And I'm going to build some houses and do some work on a school. And we have the feminine hygiene kits that he talked about. And also we're doing, there's some doctors and dentists from the mainland that are going to be doing some dental and medical stuff. So we're really getting our money's worth with, we're going to be down there for about 2 weeks total. Doing all this stuff.
And they said, remember, you can't wear shorts above the knee, tank tops, and leggings. They're your closed-toed shoes, you know, and going, isn't it kind of hot and muggy down there? Now, I'm not sure if it's because bugs climb up your pant leg or, you know, it's culturally too much show and tell or what, but we've got a lot of rules. They said I could bring a guitar, so there is some hope. But anyway, there'll be a lot of Lions projects between now and July. Brian is the king of garage sales. We have him out at the pole barn, and it's amazing that he can get rid of everything no matter what we give him. And It's a big project, and again, you know, there's going to be some from Fairbanks, some from Juneau, and they're all really in the Lions organization. You know, our motive is to help, and our motto is to we serve, and it's part of every club to have some legacy project this year because we're 100 years old.
Oh, congratulations.
And, and we're blessed that we've had such a thriving club in Kodiak. I was asked last week to go to Australia and be their guest speaker. The The Lions have six constitutional areas in the world. Say, in Asia has their own government for our organization. There's actually twice as many Lions in Asia than there are in North America. You go, well, how does that work? Well, culturally, they're kind of where we were in the 50s and 60s. So everybody raised their hand. I want to help. I want to help. We have a harder time than them because we kind of got to the phone in the hand thing, I think. But we're doing well. We're holding our own. And so all over the world, we're celebrating. And then we all get together in Chicago.
That's right.
You know, July 4th will be a big celebration because that's where the organization started. Old Melvin Jones and a bunch of guys got together and said, how can we make our community better?
When might you leave for the trip?
We're taking off the 21st of July.
Right.
All right. So you have quite a bit of time to raise the money
that
you need.
When we're scratching our imagination. I mean, not everybody puts on a lip sync contest, you know.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure that'll draw.
Yeah. They said, you're not going to make any money. So, you know, we're trying to think, how can we, you know.
How much do you need to raise?
Well, you know, we're buying our own tickets, but to stay alive down there for a week or for 2 weeks, it's probably $1,000, mm-hmm. you know, because we're in buses and, you know, sleeping on Red Cross cots only lasts so long. You know, there's something to be said for a good hot shower, even if you can't drink the water.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking probably trying to get at least $4,000 together for our travel team.
Okay. So, Brian, can you give some insight into what kind of building you will be involved in?
Sure. What we have, basically kind of prefab concrete building blocks that we can put together with a metal roof. They're going to have the concrete slab already pre-poured for us. So basically what we got to do is go in and put the blocks together and the roof on and do the inside work. And then there's also some work that we need to do on a school. You'd be surprised at what I can do with a screw gun and a little bit of time. So we're going to do some repairs and maybe some plumbing and some electrical, but we just got to kind of get down there and see what we can do.
And some of these are homes for individuals down there?
Right. The building, the concrete block houses, those are dwellings for families.
Okay. And could you talk a little bit about the medical work you'll be doing?
Well, you know, it's kind of an extension. There's two other organizations, VOSH, which is Volunteers for Optometric Care, and then Doctors Across Borders. And we kind of use the same channels to get stuff without paying a tariff on it down there. So we're taking 5,000 pair of glasses from North Pole, Alaska, where we send them all up that we even get from Kodiak to be recycled. And then we're using last year, just between the time school started and Christmas, we screened 1,200 kids, our club did, you know, here in Kodiak for problems. And it's kind of like an X-ray. It shoots a light into your eye and back and says if your eyeball's long, short, or has problems. And that's what we'll be doing down there. But it also gives us a reading of what the guesstimated refraction is. And so we can go through quite a few children with those automatic refractors. And that will be my job, and I'll have Chris Jones will be helping me. She's a school teacher here for second grade. And Kathy Morin will be doing a lot of our logistics. You know, somebody has to stack everything and keep us organized. And so it's a lot to put on the table, but it's exciting. It's going to be a fun, but yet we'll know that we weren't somewhere when we come back.
Have you been on that kind of trip before?
I did Window Rock, Arizona. Has a reservation for natives, and I did that one summer, and that was rewarding. And I saw 500 kids in 2 days.
Oh wow, that's a lot. You must have spent hours with children.
Yeah, I had a lot of help though. You know, when you line them all up like a dozen eggs, you can shoot, and the ones that flunk, you shove them over here, and then you see them again. You know.
Okay, and have you been on a trip like this before, Brian?
No, I haven't been on an international trip like this before.
All right, and so we are running out of time now, but why don't you just remind us when your event is? And
all right.
Stephanie, you too.
So I know there's a whole lot of hams out there in Kodiak that would love to come out and be on stage with us. We're going to be at the Mecca on Saturday the 18th. The bar opens at 8, and we're going to get started at 9. And it would be great to see everybody out, come out and support us.
Sure. Just walk from next door over at that fine dinner
right,
you're attending.
Which is at what time?
Saturday, February 18th. We still have tickets available for $50 a seat, and we're still accepting door prize donations from businesses in town.
And how much are tickets?
$50 a seat.
All right. Thank you all for joining us. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks.